Tuesday morning, Japanese citizens woke to sirens warning them of a possible missile attack and telling them to seek safety. At the same time, an intercontinental range ballistic missile had been fired from Pyongyang and was flying above Japan. Thankfully, of course, the missile did not collide with the country but broke up into three pieces and fell into the Pacific Ocean. Breakfast producer Morgan Burley caught up with Dr. Marco Beljak from the University of Melbourne to discuss what the world's response to North Korea's latest threat has been.
Pretty much the standard, the type that we've come to get used to, a bit of bluster from our good friend Donald Trump, less so than previously, talk of economic sanctions and the like, pretty much more of the same, which probably leads us to suspect that the dynamic will continue.
Has Japan made a response at all?
Absolutely. The Japanese Prime Minister has expressed a great deal of concern, as you would imagine, but at the concrete level, there are very little options the Japanese have, South Koreans and indeed the United States. And the options that they do have, there's a reluctance to exercise them. So I think that the real question is not so much what the Japanese have done as compared to what the Japanese haven't done and can do. And that applies also to us. And that is the opening up of serious bilateral and multilateral diplomatic avenues.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that Japan and the US and Australia haven't actually done much to North Korea since everything that has happened?
Well, in regard to Australia, I think it's pretty much we toe the line from Washington, so there's no great big mystery there. Insofar as Japan is concerned, that's a little bit more complex. You do have a relatively conservative, nationalistic administration in Japan that has sought to, for want of a better word, use the Korean strategic dynamic as an excuse to use that word, sort of redress the key articles of the Japanese constitution, the pacifist articles and so on. So there's been a reluctance in Japan on nationalistic grounds, I think, to engage in serious diplomacy with respect to North Korea. But there's also, of course, there's a question of Japan's alliance relationship with the United States, as it is with us.
Did this missile intentionally miss Japan, or was it like aiming for the ocean just to see how far it could go?
This particular missile, the Hwasong-12 intermediate range ballistic missile, this was its second test firing. The first was successful, and it was fired on a high angle lofted trajectory. And the reason why it would have been launched on such a trajectory to deliberately avoid overflying Japan. In this particular case, the missile was fired deliberately so that it would overfly Japan. That was one of its key purposes. And from a technical perspective, an important feature to the second test is that by firing the intermediate range ballistic missile on a standard minimum energy trajectory, it would have provided North Korea with some insight into the rigors of re-entry. One of the things that's divided the analytical community with regard to North Korea's missile capabilities is precisely at the level of the re-entry vehicle. The purpose of the re-entry vehicle is to protect the nuclear warhead from the rigors of re-entry, and a standard minimum energy trajectory test, which necessarily, if fired in an easterly direction, must go over Japan, would provide North Korea with some important insight, much more than a lofted trajectory. So there are two key factors here. There's some political purposes behind it, but on the other hand, there's some scientific, technical engineering purposes behind it as well. And there have been two successful tests of the Hwasong-14 intercontinental ballistic missile, of which the Hwasong-12 forms the first stage. They've both also been on a lofted trajectory. And if the North Koreans want to test the Hwasong-14 ICBM, which has a much longer range than the Hwasong-12, it will also have to go over Japan, but it will get that much closer to the United States. So that would be an interesting situation. But, yeah.
It's a very complicated issue, definitely.
Without question.
I'm speaking with Dr. Marco Beljak about North Korea's latest missile test. Now, the South Korean government has been quick to respond to this and says that they are planning for military action against the North. Do you think that this will actually take to fruition and see the involvement of other countries?
Yeah, I don't think that there are any real military options here. I think that the South Koreans are huffing and puffing and bluffing. First of all, we have to remember that South Korea and Japan have lived under the North Korean nuclear shadow for quite a while now. The North Koreans with Nodong missiles, extended-range Scud missiles and the like, do have the capability of launching a nuclear strike on South Korea. But not only that, the North Koreans have mass artillery ranged on the border. They can also, with that mass artillery, fire chemical and biological shells. And they could wipe out Seoul or a good part of it very, very quickly. So, and the South Koreans are aware of this. There are really limited military options here. South Koreans know this. I mean, if the South Koreans had viable military options, they would have exercised them long before today.
Yeah. Yeah, they're sort of trapped, in a way, with their options.
They are, but they do have an option, a very good option, and that's diplomacy. In South Korea, previously had a very conservative government that was closely aligned with conservative elements in the United States. Less so now. Now we have a liberal administration that did promise to open up diplomatic avenues with North Korea. This is a road that is available to the international community. It's available to us. It's available to the United States. It's available to the Japanese. It's available to South Koreans. And there seems to be this view that the North Koreans have no interest in engaging in serious bilateral and multilateral diplomacy with regard to denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. That view is actually false. There have been some interesting recent statements where the North Koreans have suggested that if the United States were to end what it refers to as its hostile policy, it would be prepared to consider the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. I think these avenues should be explored. There exists room for diplomacy, and we should not simply assume that North Korea would not be a serious interlocutor. And don't forget that when it comes to the diplomatic record on the Korean Peninsula, it has a complex history, and the North Koreans aren't exactly an ideal interlocutor. But I would strongly suggest that if you take a look at it, nor is the United States.
Dr. Marco Beljak, he's from the University of Melbourne, and he was having a chat with breakfast producer Morgan Burley here at Radio Adelaide about North Korea's latest missile test that caused Japan citizens to run for shelter.